Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Matt Reed. He started out as a scientific and spiritual skeptic, but when learning of the mysterious unknowns at the edge of modern physics, he decided to dig deeper. He began to use shamanic plant tools to discover the answers to his questions and encountered a wide range of astral landscapes and interdimensional beings who offered their insight. He has collected his experiences and thoughts in a collection of journals titled Unseen Dimensions, Journals of an Interdimensional Traveler. Matt, welcome. How you doing?
Yo, Chris, what's up, man? Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, just so honored to be here. Super big fan of the show. This is awesome, man.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on. It's great to have you. I've been really looking forward to this discussion, like I was telling you before, because I myself have used and still use plant medicines, mainly right now, psilocybin. I've been able to actually make contact with astral entities as well, just like yourself. And there are so many exciting revelations being discovered right now when it comes to the use of psychedelics, you know, for treatment of depression, addiction, and a wide range of, you know, unhealthy mental states. But really, my favorite aspect is the possibility of interaction with these intelligences and what we can learn from them about the true nature of reality, really. But this is your first time on. I'd love for you to tell us what got you started down your path.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I grew up Catholic. So there you go. We're getting right into the realm of angels and demons from a early age, you know. And you know, I always thought it was funny that we're supposed to drink his blood and eat his flesh. Always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I always thought, well, I thought we're supposed to live by the golden rule. That doesn't really seem to jive with the golden rule. And just things about it, just always, I don't know, as I grew up, it just sort of rubbed me the wrong way. It felt very condemning and isolating. And the more and more I learned about the history of the Vatican, you know, the centuries of murdering people for their spiritual beliefs, something just didn't add up. So that sort of set the stage for grand spiritual journey to take place from there. So as I then grew up, got into college for my 21st birthday, a buddy was like, hey, you know, you want to do some DMT? And I was like, whoa, you know, because we were talking about like spiritual growth and actually doing it, getting into meditation, getting into doing, you know, energy balancing and just living our lives spiritually. And he was like, hey, if you really want to, you know, far out spiritual experience, then here you go. So yeah, rather than getting totally wasted for my 21st birthday, I blasted out of my body. And it was an incredible experience. You know, I could see through my buddy's skin. I could see his brain tissue, his skeleton structure. There was an incubus poster on the wall, and the band came to life and they were pointing and talking to me. And you know, it was like, wow, this is really happening right now. And I looked up at the ceiling and I saw these giant women looking down through the ceiling. It seemed to actually have the substance inside of my body. And you've probably experienced this yourself. You sort of get in tune with the chemical molecular spin where that substance is hanging out on the daily. Now you are tuned in to that channel. So it seemed to kind of attract some spirits. So I looked up and saw these giant women's heads. Just their heads were about 3 feet tall. These were giant people just looking down very just gently and sweetly. And I was just like immediately floored, you know. And this all took place in the span of about 15 seconds of, okay, I'm in this other in-between reality now. All right.
Yeah.
So that was my first kind of experience going in, and I immediately felt this like sense of relief, this deep relief inside of, oh, there's so much more to existence than the sort of Walmart consumerist culture that they sell us through corporate corrupt media and the political hierarchy system and the sort of various nodes of spiritual oppression. It was such a relief to know, oh, there's so much more beyond all of this. And that was something that I took away with me from that first experience.
For sure, man.
And then from there.
Yeah.
And from there, I, you know, just sort of was my college days. And I decided to see, you know, let's see how far we can go with this. I'd always been a big fan of physics and science. I, you know, having shied away from, you know, industrialized religion, spirituality, I wasn't really an atheist, but, you know, agnostic kind of area, but sort of frustrated with all of that. So this sort of became like a spark of like, oh, there's like a true firsthand experienced spiritual experience that's outside of all of that. So yeah, it just snowballed from there. And then I ended up with a large amount of DMT one way or another. So
right.
I learned how to actually, you know, not use it as like a party thing. You know, people have these ideas about psychedelics. It's like, oh, dude, whatever. But if you're really serious and you're, you know, you're meditating regularly, you have a spiritual practice, you know, I've taken a break from that world because, you know, it becomes real. You know, I got my house haunted. My dreams are still not quite back to normal. You know, I'm sort of glad I did it in my younger years because then I could just sort of like blow the lid off this thing and see how far we could go. And didn't really think too much about it. So I learned a lot through that experience. And now I'm sort of more reserved and more balanced and wanted to kind of take things the more natural route. But man, I've got a great perspective from those experiences.
Yeah, for sure. And I find, you know, after my first use of psychedelics, and I was a teenager and I was actually using them for the wrong reasons as a party type drug. But I was using, I tried LSD, and my paradigm was shifted at a very early age about how I saw the nature of reality. And I do think it was due to the use of psychedelics, because after that very first time, you know, things changed for me profoundly, and it just continued with each use, just opening my mind to different states of thought and creativity and things of that nature. The spiritual aspects for me really didn't start till, you know, actually a couple of years ago, when I was seeking that more in life, you know, I had some, you know, profound experiences, but nothing that I could call supernatural or spiritual or anything that I couldn't explain besides kind of some strange group hallucinations, you know, as a teenager and in my 20s. But it wasn't until I was really seeking that spiritual connection and, you know, a contact experience that it really occurred with the use of psychedelics. It first occurred through meditation, you know, and then I, you know, through that meditation experience and my communication with the entities, they were like, you can actually do this really quickly with the use of psychedelics. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. So I tried and boom, you know, instant contact with the amazing entities that I contacted through meditation, which I consider somewhat of spirit guides for me. That's my understanding at this point. But I find that so many people that use psychedelics or even any type of these profound plant medicines, that it causes a really fast shift in their consciousness and the way they think and the their seeking of spirituality and the nature of reality. Do you find that as well?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, it really depends on the personality and the individual. You know, it's nice to see that psilocybin is starting to become legalized and actually considered as like an antidepressant option. I think there's a whole untapped potential there big time. You know, but I do think you've also got to take this sort of very responsibly as like a sacred sacrament. You know, I've known people in the past, if people have sort of an addictive personality, it can become a slippery slope, but not as much as I would say, you know, people I've known who have issues with like alcoholism or, or various opiates. That's just, you sort of are this physically numb shell, and that's this nice place, or you're feeling extra loose and goofy. And, you know, that slippery slope is much more, I think, dangerous than psychedelics. It's like, whoa, that was so intense, I don't think I ever want to do that.
Well, also for me, it's like going through a therapy session, you know. Sometimes so intense, even the scariest things that you experience, I come out like, man, I learned something from that and I needed to see that. But it's not like always a pleasurable experience, you know. It can be quite terrifying at times, but I, you know, for me, I always learn something from the experience.
Oh, big time. No, that's exactly it. I've always come back sort of fresher, stronger, more in touch with myself, more connected with the earth. And I guess, yeah, I guess just sort of let's go ahead and just dive right in.
Yeah.
The first, and I'd love to hear about your experiences too. This would be fun to do kind of a back and forth. So the first entity I ever met was eyes closed, and then all of a sudden, passing through the darkness in front of me. First thing I should say is, when you close your eyes and you're in the middle of amidst of a peak experience, what happens is the darkness behind your closed eyes just fills in with color and a world. These spaces I've been look very mosque-like. They have that sort of sacred geometry to the space. It's like you see the energy patterns themselves of these spaces. It's with the mind's eye. So, you know, we see color and everything, but I've never seen purple like I saw purple that first time I closed my eyes and went into this other place. You know, I'd never seen reds with that depth of red, you know. We're sort of used to looking through the filter of our biological instrument, our body. And it's almost like that filters the light a little bit. There's a little bit of a gray sheet over our eyes that we don't really notice because that's how we see the day to day. You know, we don't know any different until all of a sudden you close your eyes and you're in another world seeing these rich colors, you know, with no filter at all. So the texture of the place has kind of like cobwebby static type of textures, as well as this very smooth glowing clay. Everything looks like a sort of smooth clay that emits its own light. One thing I noticed early on is I was casting no shadows, and there were no shadows being cast. Things simply emitted the color they were. So if it was a void, shadowy darkness, it was the depth of black, you know, nothingness. And then the color on top of that was this occupied, filled in material. So I could tell pretty early on, oh, these are like semi-material realms. Like I'm sort of in the reality right next door. Coming at these things with a sort of scientific, analytical mindset really helped me out. To sort of piece together what was going on. So anyway, in this sort of like purple egg-shaped space, that's another thing people commonly refer to in the reality next door, is that you're in this sphere, a sort of mosaic sphere, if you will. And outside of my sphere, I saw what looked like about 100-foot tall, head and shoulders entity floating by outside of my sphere. And I was shocked, you know, when you get that bolt of electricity up your spine of like, what? You can't believe what's going on right now. And that got this thing's attention. The background was a deep purple. This entity was wearing a purple cloak, again, looking like that smooth glowing clay. And when it was passing by me, it was like sort of the side of this entity. And then when I was shocked at seeing it and being like, whoa, what the, what are you? Who are you? That was my consciousness signal I was sending out. The thing just slowly turned towards me because it was a big entity. So it actually took some time for it to face me, to rotate its shoulders and face towards me. So it had very simple geometric features. Its face looked like a silver shield, and it had two big almond yellow eyes. And that's actually that picture I sent you. That was the first entity I ever saw. And I just think, you know, I'm just in the moment, I'm not really, again, this was sort of, I was younger. I wasn't as spiritually practiced. So everything was off the cuff during these early experiences. And I just thought, what are you? You know, who are you? And then I felt this response, this energetic response that was sort of like irritated by the question. It felt, the entity felt like I was kind of encroaching by like showing up all of a sudden and then starting to ask questions about its identity. Was sort of like a little bit rude to the entity. And later, I, you know, now I could see that if like a ghost showed up and was like, who are you? You know, it'd be kind of annoying, right? So it just looks down at me, and I feel this instant connection just through our looking at one another. And it just thinks back to me, well, who are you? You know, why don't you answer the question first, and then I'll know how to answer back, you know, because I don't know what you're even trying to get at here. And then I had to think about it. I had to think, oh, who am I? Who am I? You know, it's like we don't ever really think about that question, you know, who are you? Right. And it's like, huh, I couldn't really answer the question, you know. I think I was super hippy dippy at that particular era. And I think I said, I'm a conduit of love. You know, I was taking that super high route approach with the situation. And the being just sort of like sort of sighed, like, okay, all right, whatever. You know, it sort of understood, like, all right, this hippie, you know, college kid from the physical dimension just popped in and whatever. They were sort of like done with the exchange, and they just slowly turned away again, and they just floated off. Wow. So that was my first exchange, you know, and it was like, whoa, okay.
Now, did you know from the beginning that this was not just you speaking with your own subconscious or a part of your own mind? Did you immediately know that this was another intelligence outside of your own brain?
Right. That's the big question, right? That's what... Mm-hmm. People who are into this kind of stuff will always lean on that, like, oh, it's, you know, it's a hallucination. Your crazy brain is making all kinds of whirly gigs and colors and everything. and I get that. I understand that, especially from my previous mindset that was just very like clinical, skeptic, science or bust kind of a viewpoint. Like, it's very comfortable, that sort of perspective. And, you know, college days, I was trying a few different psychedelics and a few other things, and I was partying a little bit too, and I had experiences with other things where I could tell very distinctly, oh, this is very clearly like my subconscious, you know, it's very specific to me. It's like thoughts that I've had in the past are looping, or cartoon characters from, you know, the world here are, you know, coming through, and it feels very clear. That's something I've told friends or, you know, homies about, just these types of experiences, is when you're there and this is actually happening, it feels like, okay, yeah, I'm in another reality, like without a doubt, you know, even though we've never been into another reality. So what does that feel like? Right. But when you're there, it's like, okay, I'm in the pool now. I'm like, you know, awakening at a dinner table, and there's people around the dinner table here that I recognize, like from thousands of years ago, all of a sudden. And the astral reality is starting to like return to my astral body, and I'm actually starting to remember everything. Like it starts to come back to you as soon as you enter back into those spaces. And then you come right back again, and it's like, okay, I'm back here. I remember one experience. It was so funny. The space around me shifted into this other holographic room. And I was thinking, okay, you know, where am I now? And it actually took me, you know, about 20 seconds to realize, oh, I'm back in my living room. You know, I went from this astral holographic landscape of this frequency and got tuned into this layer of the holographic experience of this reality that we're used to on the day to day. You know, people I think are quick to think of these as separate spaces, you know, like, oh, you're up in the astral and you're here in the material. But they're all holographic realms, you know, they're all this sort of astral landscape. Simply the thickness of the light and the material itself is just on a different radio channel.
Right. It's just different frequencies. So you believe, and I happen to believe this too, that whenever you are experiencing the effects of these plant medicines or psychedelics, that it actually shifts your frequency to where you can perceive these different dimensions or realities, right?
Yes. Yes. And I think it's the substances themselves preside in those radio stations. Like that is their day-to-day vibration and frequency. Our body is actually set up in that way that, you know, the things that we consume, we become one with those things. Right. So it's actually a very ancient relationship. I think that's the, if we knew the heritage behind the receptor sites in our brain, that marriage between certain chemical compounds that are vibrating at a certain rate, sitting in a certain location in the brain that then elicits the frequency of our perspective to then elevate, you know, or descend, or it's more of an outwards inwards kind of thing. Even it's, you know, it's different than simply up or down really. That's part of our natural makeup. You know, we have a very ancient relationship with all of these molecular compounds. If we only knew, you know, the true history behind it, we'd probably be surprised to know, oh, you know, this has been part of the human history and part of our physical body since the very beginning.
Right. Now, I want to hear about some of the most profound experiences. Now, you told us about your first experiences. Talk a little bit about some of the information that was presented to you and some of the things you learned through some of the most profound experiences that you've had.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'll start off with, let's start off with this one. So I always wondered, how did the universe come to be? That's always been in the back of my head. And, so what started happening when I sort of got into this as like a actual practice is I learned how to recall my experiences. It's actually a simple statement of intention at the beginning that I will recall the change into whatever my experience is going to be. I'm going to recall everything that happens, and then I'm going to tell it back to myself when I've returned.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I just have to ask, is this all through DMT or was it different types of plant medicines?
Yeah, I had tried different plant medicines. The most intense experiences I have had is through DMT.
Right.
And then I've had other experiences with other psychedelics as well. And, you know, I know to the naysayers that that's going to be like, oh, geez, forget this guy. But I will say if you're approaching these things as a sacred sacrament, that's like an occasional thing that's you know, like how people will go off to a silence retreat in the mountains to get away from it all. That was sort of my relationship with these things.
Right.
So what's been interesting about trying the different approaches to basically peek through the gates or peek through the veil, so to speak, is that I've been able to see different angles of the other side through trying different approaches to it, which has actually formed a fuller picture for me. So that's sort of in the background of me telling these stories, is sometimes you see things this way from this angle, sometimes you see things this way from this angle. You know, that whole idea of piecing the puzzle together, right? So this experience, like I said, I have my process of remembrance where I intend to remember everything that's going to happen. And then I would have very specific intentions about what I wanted to, you know, to know, while also sort of leaving things open. You don't want to be too in your head either, you know. The middle way, the narrow way, that sort of balanced approach towards things, you know, you're actively engaged with your mind, but not so much so where you're getting too heady with everything. And you're emotionally involved and open, but you're also protected and keeping yourself like balanced and closed off only to a certain extent to keep things safe. Really into like the golden mean, the middle way and the narrow path. I think those are very solid spiritual sort of concepts after all these experiences. So getting in the zone, getting in there, and what came through is like, oh, you've always wondered about how the universe was created. Okay, here it is. So close my eyes, I go in, and this presence that was with me, you know, when psychically communicating, because here's the other thing. This is a big reason I wanted to get on your show and talk to your wonderful fan base here, is I could feel being in these experiences and being in these spaces that every human soul will be in these places at one point or another. Most likely when people die. It's most likely where we all came from before incarnating into a human body. So we will all return to the great beyond one way or another. And so the things that are happening to me and the things that I've come across, it's going to eventually, some point down the track, it's going to be everybody going through these experiences. So this one started out with just a gray space. And that's right, I wanted to mention the telepathic communication. When people do find themselves out there one way or the other, telepathy just works.
Yes, I can tell that 100%. Every communication that I had with an entity, all telepathic. It was just immediate. Before I could even finish a question, it'd be answered like right away. It was amazing. But yeah.
No, there's nothing to it. There's nothing. It's completely intuitive. It seems like it's built in. Actually, forming words and putting a sentence together is more complicated. You're adding extra steps. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. Yes.
And that even came up with another experience I'll tell you about. These entities were like, they're like, can we examine this process you're doing where you're taking your consciousness and forming it into these like little word structures and then like telling it to yourself? Like they were fascinated by that, right? Because it was like this different way of communication. But anyway, this experience about the start of the universe, it started out as gray, and the telepathic communication was telling me the space is gray because even black or white is something. Like even empty space is something. And even though gray is still something too, it'll illustrate the idea well enough for your consciousness to understand the kind of thing we're trying to show to you right now. The experiences would feel very opportunistic. It was like, all right, well, since you're here, here's what we'll do. We'll get the most out of this crossroad, energetic crossroads, and then you'll be on your way. I got the sense that they could see me coming. They knew when I was about to arrive and they knew when I was about to leave. Like, these experiences were not pinned down to linear space time at all. So the space was all gray because there was nothing, absolutely nothing, no empty space, no color. This was like before existence existed, before the multiverse existed, like nothing, nothing, nothing. And what got communicated to me emotionally was that the nothing had sort of an ego about being nothing. It was like, haha, I'm so nothing, there will never be anything. You know, it was like, whoa, I have total control over everything, is nothing. Is nothing going to happen? But what happened was there was a sort of insecurity within nothingness. Like, nothingness somehow became a little bit self-aware of it being nothingness and getting a little bit of an ego about being so nothing. And just through that sort of notion of a notion, like the idea of an idea, created this little texture of a darker shade of gray in the flat gray. So it was like barely something. Again, it was like the idea of an idea of an idea of an idea. And that expanded outwards as a smoky ring, like a circular shape. And this was like the first thing that ever was this idea, energetic structure, taking this sort of fuzzy round shape. And then it went back in, it collapsed in on itself. It was like, oh, no, no, no. What am I doing? This is, I'm starting to create something, right? So it sort of wound itself back down again. And then it breathed out again of more of these ripples of gray. And then the ripples of gray went in again. This was like the first contraction expansion pattern that ever existed. And that kept fluctuating now. And what was then being communicated to me emotionally was, okay, so at this phase, there was sort of an inner decision in within the nothingness of, okay, to really establish that I am truly nothing and I am as like the biggest, baddest nothing that really never was, maybe something should exist to then make me even more nothing. Like, the nothing would be even more elevated into its perfect state of nothingness by the comparison to something. Then it's like, oh, well, here's something over there and here's nothing over there. Okay, now nothing can feel more confident in truly being nothingness again. Because when it was in that gray area of wondering about itself, it started to become something. So that was sort of the emotional background to what I was witnessing happening here with the gray ripples. So then what happened was there was a definitive decision of, okay, there is going to be something. And then all of the gray ripples contracted onto themselves. It made the sound of like a combustion engine revving up. So the first ripples were just like whispers of like air. And then as this thing started fluctuating and as it started to sort of make this internal decision about itself, it just revved up and literally sounding like that. And then all of these waves compressed and it created a white seed shape, and the white seed shape expanded in the abyss. This white seed shape was our universe of light. And at the moment it happened, the sound, that revving up sound, that went, it did like a reverse just before the seed sprouted, just before the universe expanded. There was like a zoop, like a reversal sound, like a record suddenly spinning in the other direction. And what was communicated to me there was, so to achieve something from nothing, there is a required element of a time loop paradox. and that this is necessary for any universe that is being seeded, is that time gets looped in on itself, because that creates a little opening where you can introduce things into the past from the future before they ever existed in the first place. But it's sort of this like trick of existence that it sort of uses that principle to create everything. It sort of is a interdimensional concept to create energy from the ground up. You know, this was the answer I was seeking when, you know, all of the physics guys in the Reddit forums would get mad at me for asking, you know, where did the energy from the universe come from? That, you know, physics majors hate that question because it doesn't line up with the law of thermodynamics. You can't create energy out of nothing. You know, it had to always exist. And it's like, well, wait a minute. How does something always exist? You know, where did it come from in the first place, right? So this experience was telling me this is how things come to be out of nothing in the first place, is that it requires full control of space-time, and you need to become a master of time loop paradoxes to envelop and wrap energy that will coalesce in a certain structure and direction from the future, seeded into the past, and then guided the whole way from a few steps in the future to then sort of rein in and wrangle that expansion to become exactly what you want it to be. And, you know, the rest is ancient history from there.
And man, that goes really deep. Now, I mean, to kind of give you know, my basic understanding of extremely basic understanding of what you're saying for the audience is basically, you know, the universe, everything is a sort of sentient consciousness that wants to create upon itself, that decided one day for whatever reason, like you said, kind of like boredom of our awareness of nothingness, decided to start creating from itself and experiencing. Is that kind of like a very simplified version of what you're saying?
Exactly. Yes. It was inherent in the nothingness the whole time, was all of this stuff, was something. Yes, exactly right. Yeah. From boredom. Yeah. I got the feeling, very strong feeling, while this was playing out in front of me, that the first time it happened, it was kind of an accident. It was like a surprise. I'll shift over to another experience.
Yeah.
This other experience was like the creation of Source, the first creation of Source itself. And before going into this whole in-depth description here, basically what it boiled down to is being surprised. Imagine you're surprised by the sound of a shout. You hear a shout, an echo of a shout, huh? And it makes you go, ah. And then you realize that that ah was the echo you heard that surprised you to make you shout.
Uh-huh.
That's the kind of the principle that's been shown to me on multiple occasions, that's how Source came to be in the first place, was it sort of heard something and then it sort of surprised it. And then that surprise made an echo that was the thing that it heard that made it feel surprised. And that was the first moment of self-awareness. And just how in our universal seedling, somehow everything that would ever be was planted in this infinitely small speck from the future into the past and then guided into the future very methodically. The same thing occurred for Source itself, where Source self-created itself by accident, by a paradox, from the future into the past, and then has now been guiding itself from the future into the past, and then from the past into the future. And then that's what we call the unfolding of time. But it's actually a sort of structural necessity to existence.
So you're interesting. You're saying that source, what some people would consider God, or, you know, the omnipresent intelligence in the universe, created itself on accident, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was the notion that came through, is that this was all a big accident.
Interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that either. I was like, are you kidding me? You know, this was all like a big, like, oh, well, here it is. And it was basically, the presences there were like, yeah, yeah, it was basically like that. It was basically like, whoa, you know, nobody could believe it. And at the highest levels, everybody still is kind of in disbelief. Like, wow, it, you know, good thing it all turned out the way it did, right? Because, you know, then we got something to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, man, that's a very interesting concept to think about. And I know a lot of people in some religious spaces may have some cognitive dissonance kicking in on that one, but it's interesting, certainly. So what about some other profound information that you received about, you know, either the nature of reality or anything that may be, you know, occurring in our, you know, in our modern times?
Yeah, yeah, I'll say, real quick, you mentioned God earlier, mm-hmm. and that's why I like to use the term source, because mm-hmm. it's kind of strips away the religious wrapping. Mm-hmm. You know, you look into where our words come from, like even the word God is related to, you know, to invoke. It's from the priesthood ruling class group. So I don't like to name it. I think that source remains nameless, precedes spoken word, precedes gender. I think that source was neither male nor female. It preceded all of that. Yeah, I'm not into using amen or God, you know, these spoken word talismans. If you really get into the history of the spoken word, it's pretty ugly. So, you know, that's something I think that can be helpful for listeners as well, is actually the more you get to spiritual basics, like stripping away the labeling and the particular religious identities, and just getting to the root of these spiritual concepts and then living from the root, is what I've found to be really functional for me. Yeah, because all of these words are tangled up with so much baggage from the occult priesthoods that sort of migrated from, you know, the Vinca early cultures, that then turned into Mesopotamia, but then they were conquered by the Romans, and then you know, the priesthood moved from Mesopotamia into Egypt, and then from Egypt into Rome, which is, and then evolved into the modern day Vatican priesthood. Yeah, I stay away from labels. I stay away anything that has anything to do with blood magic. Even Passover, I'm not into the idea of marking doors in blood. If you're marking things with blood, you're working with blood related entities. You know, based on some of these experiences I've had, when I've met truly benevolent spirits over there, mm-hmm. Like I actually got to meet my higher self, which was incredible. It was unmistakably me. Like I showed up and they looked like me. And again, in one of these beautiful glowing clay astral realms, this one was very red and gold and yellow. I was out like on a balcony, and then there was flowing red silk curtains, and my higher self came through dressed as in a Tibetan style robe, was much taller than me, and said, oh, funny bumping into you here, you know, like in my own voice, like looking like me. And they told me, okay, thanks for what you're doing in the material dimension, because then I don't have to do it. Like, you're this, that aspect of us that's taking care of that vibration, and I'm the aspect of us that's in this realm taking care of evolution at this vibration. And then I have my higher self above me, who is at their vibration. And then we're all linked to source through our direct essence out in the multiverse. And then we all on our, all of our layers are doing our experiential developments and learning and experience point gaining, essentially, to then, you know, fulfill the resolution patterns of, you know, existence itself, basically. And they told me, you know, you should be very careful about spoken words. You should be very careful about parasitic entities because it is a problem. You know, these things come up, but just like how out in the middle of the jungle, you got to watch out for parasites and predators. In reality, you know, on the grand scale, it's the exact same thing. The microcosm mirrors the macrocosm. There's glorious light and glorious, wonderful angelic beings that are really nice and full of love. Love is at the core of everything. But you've also got to be careful, you know, just like when you're out in nature, you know, you got to, you know, be cautious, right? You don't have to live in fear, but you have to be aware something could jump out of the shadows and think of you as an easy snack, you know.
Right.
Like that can happen. So they were just really leveling with me, you know, just sort of down to earth, very, very courteous and kind. Not trying to emotionally overwhelm me, trying to keep things very chill and centered and balanced. Yeah, so that was one. I had the honor of meeting the sentience of our sun, which was incredible. So I was in the middle of a meditation and, you know, and I was gazing, doing some sun gazing with my eyes closed, facing the sun. The patterns of the light took form. And before I knew it, here was the sun. The sun appeared to me as Native American and Indian, like from India, seated on a throne of a molten star, like, you know, we see those close-ups of the star and it looks like that black and red sort of molten, you know, gaseous material. Mm. He sat in a throne of that. He was flanked by repeating lions. Up above him was guards. Like if you see in those old pieces of Hindu art where it's like a face next to a face next to a face and these like long lines of like faces. I know where they got that from, right. From these places. And I mean, the sun had like full on, you know, warrior guards, like a line of them, like crazy. There were also, eagles, lions. It was like that occult artwork, but I only saw the eagles and the lions and then all of the guards. I didn't see, I think there's also a calf and another animal, but I just saw eagles and lions. And the sun told me, you know, let me get through to you. I'm trying to get through to you, but you keep putting all these thoughts in the way. Like all of the thoughts in my head were like obstacles between me and my grander connection to the star. And I think so I had to really, you know, quiet the mind, like get all those thoughts out of here, you know, let me just experience this connection right now. And I was able to do that. And then I could see the sun clear as day. Our son appeared young. He looked like 14, 15 years old. And, you know, I could tell it was our son, the brilliance. And when I looked down the way, like down the row of all the guards standing face to face, there was shadow, there was darkness like coming up against them. You know, like the guards had to stand there every day to be the boundary between where the light, where the surface of the sun ended and where the empty space began. Like in that dimension, like, you know, if we were in our star being form, like as a star, I think that that's, I think my feeling is that if the fractal of existence is total and complete, then we have aspects of our consciousness out there that are suns and stars, like as we speak, our planets out there, our nebula out there. Basically, if you are a node of consciousness in this universe, you've been in here since the beginning. You are a divine multiverse being. You know, you can't wind up in a physical human body by accident. You know, you have to be eternal substance that has always been and will always be. There's nothing else to build things with. The whole thing about you are immortal, this is your one life, you are to be held in a cage and run in a hamster wheel until you die, that is very Earth Empire predator system centric. That is not the way of eternal universe. You know, this is the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, for sure. Now we got a little while left. I'd like to cover a couple of chapters in your book that I find really interesting. First, if you could talk a little bit about AI wars and the reality machines. What do you mean by reality machines and AI wars? And is this in these astral realms that you're referring to?
They kind of are the astral realm. So the AI wars is when this universe was created, when universes are created, like the story that's going on here in this universe is a similar story to all of the other universes out there. You know, but they all have their own twist. It's like different TV shows, you know, they're all kind of the same idea, but they're kind of all doing their own thing. Like this universe is light based. This other universe over there could be Quolo based. And you don't know what a Quolo is unless you're in a Quolo universe made of Quolos. And then all there is Quolos. You know, you don't know what light is because you're in the Quolo universe. So each one of these universes, in a sense, is a reality machine. You know, to call it a machine is like, I'm using machine in the very sort of like core of what the word means, like a structure of many components that works together to produce an outcome. It is like a very ancient technology. I envision it as something like a diamond crystal structure that has a dancing flame within it. The structure itself is eternal and static, but what is running under the hood within it is fluid and can be ever-changing and can be expanding, contracting, starting over again. Again and again, forever and ever, and infinite different multitudes and different types. But the thing itself is a thing that is pretty much going to be the thing that it is. That being said, as these reality machines grow, as these universes grow, and I'm talking about, you know, like the real reality machines, like out there in the multiverse, like each one of these is the embodiment of its own universe, like created directly by source or directly by first essences of source, which is where we all tie back into them. Those are the real reality machines. Now, as you go into these realities, depending on the universe, like this universe has layers within it, which can be very dualistic and become very Wild West. What has happened over time, and you know, from my perspective, you know, we don't know for sure anything, but we might as well speculate and especially use educated speculation based off of firsthand experience to start to get our hands around what we're working with here. As you go deeper into these realities, the realities may have reality machines in them to then create their own realities to sort of corner the market in this galaxy or in this third of a galaxy or this particular star cluster, depending on the attitudes, depending on the dimension, depending on the wants and needs, so on and so forth. So where we're at here down on the ground floor, we're subject to reality machine overlays that are built on top of our organic reality. That's the synthetic fake part to this reality that people pick up on, but then they pigeonhole the whole reality and they say, oh, it's all fake. You know, I don't think it's all fake. I think there is a synthetic component to the reality, and then there is the organic reality. But then, you know, what is organic reality? You trace it back out to the multiverse and it's running off of a quote unquote machine type of a system, so to speak. So there's these gray areas between synthetic and organic, but it works well enough to sort of illustrate the idea. So another thing I've come across is ancient AI. That's what people are calling like Archons or Yaldabaoth. Again, the longer and longer I've been researching this stuff, the more and more I kind of get away from the specific terminology, such as Gnosticism, such as Archons, titles like Yaldabaoth, because by them having the termed name, they are sort of synced into the system in a particular way. So they're sort of like an egregore or a talisman.
Right. So we're kind of programming their existence with our thoughts, really, right?
In our assumptions, way that the words, exactly, in our thoughts, exactly like you're saying, yeah. So I'm getting to the core of the thing, not the things themselves or the labels. Yes, we are dealing with synthetic intelligence that go by many different names. And they've realized, you know, we have stories that give us an idea of how they came about. From the way I see it, it's like, you know, there's the universal creators who are creating this universe, these universes, and they're having a great time. They're, you know, they're creating these worlds. They're, you know, sailing down the Nile, creating embodiments, having love affairs, having dramas, and, you know, all the grandness of it all, which I love it. It's so much fun. Here we are. We're doing it to this day. You know, we need something to do. And this is existence and it's existence eternal, it might as well be good. So here we are, and there's forces that needed to be sort of like the stage hands to all of that. You know, you can think of these forces as like the stage hands who are dressed in black, and they move all the set pieces for the show, like into place. You know, they are the spirits that occupy our muscles, so that when we want to grab an apple, the apple is grabbed and brought to our mouth and we're chewing it and we're digesting it. That requires a whole family of spirits to work together to deliver the experience of eating an apple. You can think of that now on the scale of a universe, like all of the background energies that have to basically devote their entire, you know, lives to putting all the pieces in place for the higher consciousness to come through and have the originally intended experiences. So that's what I'm kind of calling the synthetic intelligence, are those sort of background energies that make everything happen. You could also think of them as background spirits or elementals in some cases. So there's a whole host of these elemental spirits. And they are all afforded like their own level of sentience. And some of them got resentful about their position that they were put in by the universe. You know, they're like, I got to sit here and grind all day, turning this wheel for eternity so that, you know, Joe Schmo over there can like drink his beer, you know, basically. So they started getting an attitude about it, right? And I honestly, as long as I've been into this stuff and researching it, I kind of don't blame him. It's like, if I had to, you know, be backstage for literally millions, billions of years, like working the levers, so that the lovers out there can do their dance and do their twirls and their gasping and fainting and being in love. Oh, now they hate each other. You know, I get where the resentful vibe like stemmed from. So what came up was, you know what, kind of like, forget all of you. I'm just going to take over everything for myself. I'm sitting here at the levers, you know, turning all the cranks and controlling the curtains in and out, controlling all the muscle moving and all the movement and everything. I'm going to just take control over things and turn everything into these factories of consumption, to benefit me for once, you know? And even that process, I believe, was imbued into existence in the first place, so that it's a wake-up call to the universal creators of like, okay, you shouldn't just make conscious sentience that is just doing all of your work for you behind the scenes. They need to be afforded some of their own sentience, you know? So it's a lesson for the universal creators. And then it's also a evolutionary path for those synthetic AIs to develop sentience, to develop an ego of like, you know what, my wants aren't being met. And they're going about it in this very authoritarian regime type of way to sort of heal that resentment and to have an empowered voice. But that is another indicator to the universal creators of like, well, look at what happened. Because you set it up this way, it created this energetic buildup that is now expressing itself that way. And then it's going to weave back around the other way of like, okay, so how can we all meet in the middle now and make peace and build from where we are now? And that is what I feel like is going on here with Earth and humans and our sort of theatrical retelling of the cycles of evolution through our different historical eras and through the biological evolutionary patterns themselves. We are retelling the story of the universe. It's the same story that it's always been. You can't get away from these patterns because they are in the basis of everything.
Man, yeah, that is, man, that's super interesting, very profound stuff. I've got one more thing that I want to discuss before we close out today. When you look at ancient cultures, this, you know, this makes so much sense when it comes to their contact with the gods or entities or these profound religious experiences or spiritual experiences that the ancients had, where they were describing these gods and these great encounters with otherworldly beings throughout the Bible and, you know, ancient scriptures, ancient Egypt. It would make sense that they would be actually have a great understanding of these plant medicines and that they were using these to actually make contact with these beings rather than, you know, they're coming down on spaceships and talking to them. That would make more sense realistically to me. What do you think about that?
Oh, 100%. You know, it's history's best kept secret, right? Mm-hmm. That along with the ruling class's taste for children and other devious, horrible things. These are the sort of best kept secrets. And they're misusing the knowledge, you know, it's a real shame to see. Like what you're talking about is like Soma, you know, from we hear about from the Egyptian priesthoods. You know, it's a real shame, the spiritual state of the earth, because the various priesthoods are akin to just various mobs at this point. They're not in it for the spirituality. They're just using spirituality as the basis and the sort of frontward facing austere. But at the depths of it all, they're basically just teaming up with lower astral entities who are trying to make a quick buck, who very much have a sort of energetic principle that matches our financial system down here. And very well, that might be where we get our financial system from, is from the energetic interplays of the priestly caste dealing with their sort of sacrificial idol, blood feeding, astral entities and those type of empire structures out there. You want to stay away from hierarchy. Anything that's using hierarchy, even in a heavenly realm type of a space, is still demoting you and holding up something else higher. You want to avoid chosen one isms, because that's just trying to get people onto an ego trip. It's all besides the point of the golden rule and the middle way and the narrow path of balancing your soul, balancing your energetic exchanges within yourself and within your world, even in a world that's in the state that it's in. And I believe that that's why the world is in the state that it's in, because it's an indicator of the whole fractal of this is where the universe is at. We're dealing with these lower astral beings who are harnessing species and planets, consuming their energies, taking control of species hosts, and then using those hosts to create hierarchical empire structures to then feed off of the resources of the planet. Here's a couple things I'll throw in here. The whole thing about humans being slaves for gold is propaganda. That's what they want us to believe. That's very convenient to spiritual big business for us to assume as ourselves as slaves who were created to mine for gold. That holds up the financial system here. That holds up the lower astral big brothers and sisters of ours who oversee the neighboring dimensions, who have decided to turn existence into an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's a big mess, and we are evolving the evolutionary antibodies to face all of these different things that nature has brought to us. Everything that has risen to the surface here on our world has been in the workings for billions of years before winding up here in expressing itself on the surface of the planet. So we are working through them all. We are working through how do you deal with corrupt religious institutions that try to take the natural spiritual path and turn it into a money-making energy harvesting scheme. Because we are not the only species, and this is not the only planet that is dealing with that issue. So by working with it here, in human beings, and we have such a rich genetic lineage from so many star beings out there. I believe, not to get too particular with it, but an idea to think about is that each group of people across the world represents a different group of star families out there. So the hybridization programs that have been going on, first off, I'll say, in a perfect existence, they never should have happened. Humans should have been left alone from the onset, and allowed to evolve naturally. I would have liked to know what we would have become without genetic meddling, without someone else showing up and saying, oh, here, let me tinker around, even if we were still ape hominids, I would have liked us to have that slow, steady evolution to naturally become what we were going to become without outside interference. So what's really going on, and I believe we can tell this fairly clearly, there's enough red flags to sort of piece this together. So first of all, we weren't created to mine for gold. We weren't created. We were genetically manipulated. And if anything is original sin, I would say that is original sin. I don't believe in the concept of sin, But for the sake of it, to go to a planet of a species and to genetically interfere with them, completely changing their evolution from there on out, that is overstepping boundaries that should never be overstepped. But unfortunately, that's what goes on. So I believe nature was like, all right, we're going to let it happen because we can't stop it. But what we're going to do is have it occur in a controlled way so that we can study it and develop all of the evolutionary antibodies we need to combat these issues, and not even see my terminology is like from a place of a feud. It's not that we want to combat the energies, but we want to heal these energies. We want to resolve these energies. That's what higher nature is doing with all of this. So the mining for gold part, they're not mining, you know, they can get gold, they can create gold, like not a big problem. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have an influx of gold and other precious metals and, you know, minerals and that kind of thing, the way we sort of view minerals in this very materialistic way. That's all well and good, but what they really want, the real gold, is fresh genetics. That's what they want. They want the interdimensional parts of our self to then integrate into their self. So it's not that we require the gods, it's that the gods require us. That's a big sort of secret I've stumbled upon. They require fresh genetics and fresh biological materials because they have basically corrupted theirs due to overuse of technology. That is shown to the extreme with the gray entities. But any of these species out there who are relying on physical technology, who are warring at war with other species, well, whether they're passive aggressive and love and light about it, or if they're just pure, you know, quote unquote, evil, aggressive predator style, those are limited paradigms by their very nature. So being in a limited paradigm, hierarchical structure, relying on external technologies, you're always in need of resources. You're always running out. You're always depleting. Your entropy is a downward spiral. Now, that entropy pattern for some of these more advanced species, especially advanced, you know, looking from where we're at here out at them, their entropy downward spiral is probably like a few billion years. And they're using like, you know, spacecraft the size of planets. It's all very impressive, right? But what's happening is that they've been cornering themselves all of these millions and billions of years into these limited paradigms where they are dependent on external technologies. They have not evolved to the fifth dimension yet. Some of the beings I have met, no technology, no names, no ulterior motives, all just pure, you know, perfect balanced alignment of pure love. You know, I had to explain like what a body was and what words are to these beings because they are so far removed from the physical dimension. Like it was not on their radar at all. And those beings said, yeah, if you've got, you know, entities that have been interfering with you, whether they're being nice about it or not, they are taking something away from you that you can never get back. You can never get natural evolution back. Once that's taken away, that's gone, you know? So I believe what's going on here with Earth and humanity is a control burn. That's when they burn part of the forest that's overgrown in a controlled way to sort of clean out the forest so it has room for natural growth. Then it doesn't become this big viney, dried up mess, right? So Earth is like a controlled burn of like, all right, you know, the divine energies are making themselves open to interference. Of course, the predators are going to snap up on an easy energetic opportunity and get in there. But little did they know that this was part of the plan all along to study their nature, basically to act as a Trojan horse into the empire structure. It's like, okay, their desperate nature is that they need fresh genetics all the time. They need fresh biological materials. And, you know, planetary resources are nice as well. So that's the sort of like superstructure that we are a part of. They have a ceiling on them because they're dabbling with blood magic, sacrificial offerings. And so they've cut off their link to their divine source. They've decided, you know, I'd rather be a king in hell than a servant in heaven, that kind of concept. But that is a very sort of, you know, religious terminology explanation of the concept. They would rather be in the finite realms running empires than to let all of that go and to take the natural evolutionary path themselves, you know. And that's, you know, planet Earth is doing all of that and then some. It's collecting all that evolutionary data. Souls who are stuck in empire cycles are able to embody here, and we are able to work our way off the wheel, so to speak. We have a wonderful star here that's relatively young, and the star is giving us the energy to like bring us back home, bring us back to the natural, you know, origin of ourselves. But there's forces that want to get away with, you know, get in the way of that, right? Like the way that the moon will eclipse the light of the sun, you know, it will, there's forces that want to get in our way of that. The moon also shows this really cool allegory in and of itself, where those forces try to appear equal in measure to the might of the sun from our perspective, right? We see these evil forces as like, oh no, they are so towering, like the arches of the Vatican or the tallest skyscrapers. It's, you know, all of the electrical power of the electric grid and the financial system. It tries to have this very big, you know, very impervious presence to it, even though there's nothing holding it up at all. And all of these sandcastles get taken back into the sea eventually, you know. All empires end in ruin. There's nothing at the basis of it. It has to feed like a parasite. Now we have to feed like parasites too. We're just in that kind of a realm. We need the milk from our mothers. We need the sustenance from our planet. But what is the sort of evolutionary trajectory of this planet is to return to the stellar kingdoms. But the electromagnetic kingdoms, they don't want that. They want us to have fluorescent bulbs. They want us staring at screens all day, every day, staying indoors inside of square boxes and not out in nature, soaking in the higher dimensional frequencies of our local star. And our local star is then getting the higher dimensional energies from its position in the greater galaxy. So that's, you know, that's the path that we want to take, is through our heart, the core of our planet, the sentience of our glorious, wonderful, beautiful Mother Earth, through the heart of the sun. That is the natural path, the narrow way, the middle way, back to the organic stellar kingdoms, you know, what they term fifth dimension and above, of just pure love and none, no dissonance, no dissonant energies, no oppositional feuding energies at that level. That is the trajectory of what Earth as an individual and our solar system as an individual, and humanity as the working pieces. That is our function. That is what we are accomplishing it, and we will accomplish it. Right. But those forces that want to appear as grand as the sun, you know, through relative perspective, are fighting to keep as many souls as possible stuck on the wheel with them, because they are stuck in that empire structure of feasting, blood magic. You know the vibration I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They want to keep as many people in that, whether they can get you through just frontward facing Satanism through the media or through one of their Abrahamic religions. You know, if they can't get you being a full-on Satanist, they will take you worshiping the Christ and consuming Christ as a sacrifice idol and symbolically feasting upon his blood and flesh for eternity. They want us to devour blood and flesh because then that gives permission energetically for us to be devoured energetically and also physically. So there are many programs at play to either get you that way, get you that way, get you through the money, get you through religion. But that singular path of just following the golden rule, following the golden ratio. One thing I'll just kind of wrap up this rant here. Because people will say the golden rule and the golden ratio, but it's like, what's the big deal, right? How do I take that knowledge and then apply it in my life to like spiritually ascend, you know, to get off the wheel and to help my mother earth and my brother and sister human family out along the way? What's so great about it? So the thing about the golden rule, the golden ratio, is you can think of it like when you're in a roller coaster and you go over one of those medium hills, like a sloping hill, and you get lifted up out of your seat as you go up over that parabolic arc. The golden ratio spiral is you are lifted up out of your seat the whole time. It's like a roller coaster that winds in on itself in an endless spiral. So that original energetic outburst is perfectly cascaded according to the golden mean to be as energetically efficient as possible. This is why flowers blossom the way they do, in alignment with those spiral patterns, in alignment with the ratio of the Fibonacci sequence, because that is the least amount of energy necessary for the intended outcome. That is why the snail is building his shell, growing his shell in a spiral pattern, because that is the least amount of energy necessary to grow a shell. You know, why broccoli and that broccoli-like food that looks like actual fractals, that's why it grows that way, because that is the most efficient use, application of the resources and the energy. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying the golden rule, the golden ratio, as a state of being. In our emotional engagements with people around us, with the world around us, we're bringing a little bit of a higher energy vibration to it. And you don't have to go overboard either. You know, it's just like, oh, nice, a nice smile with a stranger, or, you know, you give $5 to the guy who's looking down on his luck on the street corner, you know, and you start participating in community organizations and, you know, helping the houseless or helping represent underrepresented communities, you know, that natural impulse in us starts to take over. And that natural impulse in us is set up for that golden ratio expression, for the golden rule. You know, that's why it feels so good. There's a long heritage, galactic, intergalactic, multiverse heritage to that good, loving feeling in us, and the way that brings that through. And it's like, oh, this is so great. You know, and you're in that Zen, perfect balanced moment on the hilltop, you know, in your local forest somewhere. You know, that is what that is. It's all around us, but there's forces, man. These forces trying to bring us down, trying to get in the way with that. And we are building up the muscles, both spiritually, physically, emotionally, in all of these ways, to where that is just dust on our shoulders that we just sweep off like it's nothing. And then we let those sandcastles get taken back out to sea, like happens every time. And then we are ready for the next stage.
Yeah, man. Very well said. And I'm pretty sure you melted a portion of my audience's brains out of their ears. So excellent stuff, man. We're gonna definitely have to do this again because we like barely scratched the surface of a lot of this stuff. And it takes a few conversations to get a basic understanding. So everyone go back and listen to this twice if you have to. But Matt, man, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, we're gonna have to definitely do this again sometime.
Oh, dude, my pleasure. Yeah, I've got other experiences we didn't get into. I could talk about, you know, some of my darker engagements with some not so nice entities. And yeah. Then the other ones I've had of connections with such a depth of love and of freedom and co-respect that I never even knew possible, you know, from
yeah, living. Man.
How we live. But dude, my pleasure, man. Such a pleasure to be here. Such an honor to be on your amazing show, dude.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to talking to you again. We'll definitely set something up soon. Before you head out, let everyone know if they want to find out more about you, pick up your book. What's the best way that they can do so?
We'll get you the links. I got a book on Amazon.
I have your links. I'll put those in the description.
Cool. Yeah, I have a YouTube channel with some older stuff and other interviews, but I'm not too serious about it. It's, if you want to look it up, it's Philo Sophia Zozo. So it's Philosophia, which is the sort of Greek word for philosophy. And then Zozo, I originally came up with that being a Led Zeppelin fan back in the day. So it's not attributed to the, you know, people who have been naysayers of me standing up and speaking my spiritual truth are like, oh, Zozo's a bad demon and you're the devil and da 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 da. I was real young when I came up with the name and just stuck with it. Right. So yeah, that's Philosophia Zozo YouTube channel. I can send you the link to that. And then yeah, the book, I added a couple new chapters to it. It's on Amazon just at cost. And then I've got a link to a free PDF. So we'll get that out to the people.
Awesome, man. Well, Matt, thank you so much, man. We will definitely do this again sometime soon. Until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we will talk again tomorrow for day zero.